to advertise, email podcast@thisismaggie.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Maggie.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
Hey, man, which one is this one? Hey, ghost lady. You good?
I'm good.
Hey, it's weird. Mrs. Ekapa, Umeko, yes, Kapa.
Yo.
Right? So in Cape Town, Mac is not here. He's not feeling well today, in case you're wondering. There's no Inda today, right? And we're coming live. Well, not live.
Not live.
From Sun Square, Cape Town City Bowl.
Yep.
Beautiful hotel. Check it out. We're at the rooftop, in fact. Amazing views of Cape Town all around. I hope you can see them. Amachita, drop the blinds.
Got the mountain there at the back.
Got the mountain at the back. Yeah, we had an amazing breakfast. Do check it out. Whenever in Cape Town, just come through and check it out.
Amazing.
We've got a very special guest.
Ish.
Friend of the show. She says she's the most hated woman in South Africa. The moment, your words, right? Now, this is the renowned, award-winning journalist, Melinda Ferguson. Shut up, Mel.
Hello. Yeah. I was just thinking, well, Rosemary Ndlovu, her case is over, so she probably might have got the most hated at one time. But the news at the moment, it seems like the people are hating on me.
It is you. You've just released a book. But before the book you just released, I mean, you've got so many books you've wrote. You wrote three books about your life called Smacked, Hooked, Crashed, How Trashing a Ferrari Saved My Life. Interesting title. You wrote a book on Oscar, An Accident Waiting to Happen. You wrote a book on the Kelly Kumalo story. Now we know the tragedy over there. And right now, the book that has made you say you're the most hated woman in South Africa, When Love Kills, A Tragic Tale of AKA and Anele. Mm. And that's the book you're holding right there, yeah? Jeez.
Yeah.
So much we could say.
The bomb.
Yeah. And yeah. I think when I heard that there's a book, I was like, oh, radio book. Mm. And Melinda Ferguson, I'm like, who's this Melinda Ferguson, right? Because I hadn't heard of you whatsoever. And turns out you're quite the writer with lots of history. Where does, you know, your journalism credentials, where do they start? Where does the writing bug bite you to get to this point? Where did it all start as a writer?
I'm going to go even a little bit further back. I was a very promising student. I was one of those people, like, everyone, like, voted for, like, the person who was going to succeed. And then I met heroin and crack.
Jeez.
Crack, cocaine, and heroin. And when I was 23, I started using. And all the promise that I had just got completely fucked up. I wasted my life. I landed up in Hillbrow in 1999, probably before you were born. I'm a go-go.
I'm not a 2000.
Okay, you're 2000. You were 1 year old when I was crawling on the streets.
I'm not a 2000.
Okay, you're not.
Yeah, 1999, you're in Hillbrow. Yeah.
I'm in Hillbrow. I get gang raped by a whole lot of thugs. I'm finished. I'm on my knees. I'm standing whoring for crack. I am 46 kilograms. I am ready to die. And that's in my first book, Smack. Let's not even get too deep into that. But a miracle happens. I get rescued by my brother. I get landed up on a homeless farm in the Magaliesberg.
What's a homeless farm?
A homeless farm is for where all those people at robots are standing with, like, hungry people, give me money.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like these people down at the road here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was, I was homeless. I was proper homeless. Not just like, oh my God, you know, homeless. I was proper homeless. And then I got clean on this homeless farm.
Wow.
And I crawled back to life. And I started waitressing. And I wrote a story about my 6 weeks in hell. It was like a really hardcore addict story. And I served sushi to the deputy editor of True Love magazine. She read my story.
Wow.
She published it. And then they offered me a job. So I then became a journalist at True Love magazine. I became the features editor. And for 11 years, I worked in this huge black women's magazine in South Africa. I felt like my credentials to write When Love Kills, my seeds were given to me during the time that I sat with Bonang Matheba. We did stories on Zinkle Gianni at the time. AKA was on our Sama cover. I was surrounded by stories that as a white person, I would never have been able to have accessed. But now I became part of the team of True Love. So that's my roots. Hey?
Jeez, I'm curious. So what came first? So, okay, clearly the writing came at a later stage where now you're writing about your struggles and your recovery. But what came first, the heroin and the crack? And the first hits of heroin and crack, what are they like, respectively? Oh.
Look, heroin is the most amazing drug. You know, you take it and you go to heaven. I understand why people cannot get off because it's a very calming, everything is so gentle. You also become very addicted very quickly. Crack, on the other hand, is just cocaine on steroids. I mean, it's just like insanity. And crack is so addictive. So I became addicted to the two, chasing the dragon, the heroin, and then smoking rocks, crack, and then just becoming a complete criminal. I became a criminal.
Why do you say you became a criminal?
Oh, because I stole, I frauded, I lied, I cheated. I did many terrible things during my addiction. And that's why I also understand the heart of the beast, because I do believe in this book there is a beast of addiction that runs through.
Yeah.
People have been very cagey about AKA and drugs. There was always stories, AKA coke and coke, recreational use. You know, what is recreational use? Recreational use is people getting fucked up. Maybe not on a daily level, but you're getting like completely trashed over the weekend.
Yeah.
People, I don't think drugs kind of have politeness. They don't discriminate. So you can get completely wasted and maybe be okay on a Monday morning and you're not an addict. I was just using all the time. Jeez. Is that even what you asked me?
No, but I mean, you give a very good detail of, you know, what goes on when you are on drugs like that. And I'm just, first of all, congratulations on getting
24 sober. Years clean and sober. Probably as old as you are.
Wow, what a compliment. Oh, so.
We're getting complimented today.
I haven't had a drink.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a smoker still, tobacco. Okay. I'm sorry. You know, I have to have something. But I haven't had a drink for 24 years and I haven't used drugs for 24 years. I'm nearly 25 years clean and sober. So I've walked a journey. I think that gives me a lot of, you know, never mind even the journalism. It gives me credibility and my own understanding of a beast called addict.
But now, how do you end up like, okay, it's because of drugs, but how do you survive then in Hillbrow? Because I used to stay in Hillbrow not so many years ago, right? But I think by 99, Hillbrow was already a messy area.
It was a mess.
Generally, you barely find white people. All the time I find, it's like really white people who are struggling or at a strip club, selling pussy, getting by. How are you surviving in that
selling
area?
Pussy.
You for real?
I mean, in the end, I had to sell my body for my hit. I was a crack whore. I slept with my dealers. I mean, that's why nobody can say shit about me. Like, I've said it already. Like, that's the thing is, like, trying in any way to bring my personality under review.
Yeah.
I have been very open about the hell that I put myself through as an addict. So right at the end, before I came out of that hell, I was standing on the street at 3 a.m. waiting for someone to pick me up so I could either steal from him or try and avoid sex. Because the thing is, a lot of those girls who are on the streets, we call the guys steamers, and all we want to do is steal their money.
Why do you call them steamers? Like what?
I don't know. That's the word, steamers. I guess they're like steaming around in their cars, looking for a girl. A lot of the men in Hillbrow were also crack addicts. So there would be all that. You know, we would get a man into the room, two of us. We would like seduce him with a bit of like girl on girl stuff. God, I'm being very obvious here. I hope my sons are not watching. I mean, they do know their mother was a bit of a retrobate.
Yeah.
And then the guy would turn his back, we'd steal his wallet and run. So that was like one of the things. I was a very bad hooker. I have to say, I'm not like the best hooker in town. I didn't like doing it. So I wanted to just get money so I could get crack.
But at what point then, Well, where's the turning moment where you go like,
oh, when
I need to get right. I need to get my life clean. I need to maybe go to, like you said, a homeless farm or the shelter. When does that light switch come on?
On the homeless farm, I was not wanting to stop. I wanted to jump off Ponte. That was what I was going to do. My plan was to kill myself.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, yeah, I mean, Anele Tembe and the Pepper Club, it brought up a lot for me. A girl falling from a building was something that I was wanting to do.
Yeah.
I was proper suicidal, not just like rumored suicidal. And when my brother and sister threw me on this homeless farm, because I'd been stealing from them and lying and cheating and causing mayhem as addicts, proper addicts, real addicts do, I just looked at my surroundings one morning and I thought, you might be fucked. Maybe you've got a problem. There was like a tiny voice that said, you're on a homeless farm because of what you've done. And I had a God moment, a moment of what, awakening, we call it.
Moment of clarity.
Clarity. And I got clean.
All by yourself? No.
Yeah. There was no, it was a very Christian farm, and they said the only pull here is the gospel.
Gospel.
So we had like the gospel. Every day I gave my life to Jesus, because like you had to give your life to Jesus to get a plate of food. So I gave my life constantly to Jesus. I got dunked in the river. I got my soul renewed according to the, it was a beautiful story. And I managed to get clean without any medication and without any rehab. I got the moment where I said, it's over. And I stopped.
So you never relapsed?
Never.
Beautiful.
Never. No. You know, when you properly surrender, you don't go back. Like you say, it is over.
So were you ever on drugs while you had while you were pregnant?
Twice. Yeah. I was, like, my book, Smacked, tells a very shocking story of a woman giving birth at, it used to be called the Coronationville Hotel, not hotel, hospital.
Hospital.
What's it called? The Helen Joseph now?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I was completely on drugs with my first son. I was withdrawing from heroin when I gave birth. It was one of the worst, it's one of the worst things that could ever happen to any human being, is to try and give birth while you're withdrawing from drugs. What? Yeah, it was hectic. I couldn't stop. I was so addicted.
But now it sounds like you had long been on drugs even when you fell pregnant.
Yeah.
How does it happen? Was this in a situation where you have a man who the fathers of the kids. Who
my husband
they?
Was an addict as well.
Ooh.
Ooh.
So if you're homeless, where is he?
And he was in rehab because he came from a rich family. So his parents put him into like the best rehab in Joburg, and I was told to get lost. My mother-in-law hated me, and I don't blame her, because she was like watching her two grandchildren having been born into it. Like, you know, my sons are amazing today.
Healthy.
They are not addicts. One is 20, as old as you. One is 26. 25, 27.
Yeah.
My boys are beautiful. They are so square.
Wow.
They are so straight. Because we told them everything about their, like, where they came from. My husband got clean. I carried on staying fucked up for 6 more months. And then I was chucked on the homeless farm.
And you guys still together? You and the husband?
Are you crazy? No. We left each other very quickly. You know what? A partnership that's been birthed in addiction, you cannot get away from it.
Yeah.
You cannot get clean if the other one's looking at you saying, come on, let's just have a line. Come on, let's just have a hit. It's just too, it's difficult.
So he...
He's clean.
Is he
I'm clean. We were fantastic parents. Okay. Our children went to Hyde Park High, went to Parkview Primary. We were the only clean and sober parents, because by the time they went to school, we were clean and sober.
Now, I look at the books you've written, and there's so much tragedy, you know, and there's always like a dark side, be it this current book right now with AKA and Anele, tragic, right? Oscar, there's a death, tragic. Kelly Kumalo story.
And
tragic.
I worked with Lindy Wehani on being Chris Hani's daughter, and there's her father,
there's a
Chris Hani.
There
dead.
Of Chris Hani as well.
I'm dead. I'm a dead. I'm not a dead person. I'm a person who's attracted to death, not attracted to it, but pulled
intrigued
to it.
Yeah,
it's like all the dramatic stories are the ones that I am attracted to as a writer.
Where does that come from? Do you know? Is it
my father died when I was 4 in front of me. Okay, I don't want to make this a big sad sob story about victim stuff, but my dad fell over when I was 4 years old. I was the only person in the room, and death became a huge thing for me. Suddenly, the little girl who was 4 years old suddenly understood that things ended, that life does not go on, that you die. And so I have become quite used to death, and I don't put any kind of sanctity, let's say, around dead people, because I think that's what's going to happen to all of us.
But now that's where, you see, I think why a lot of people are outraged, because a lot of us have that sanctity, and it's death is almost sacrilegious. You know, you don't write about the dead. You don't talk in some instances about the dead. And I feel like you're 4. Do you think maybe, and your dad passes away right in front of you, did that create a bit of a fearlessness in you, or maybe what you've overcome in life? Because a lot of people would be scared to pick up a pen and write about, you know, AKA and Anele, especially when we hear the names that are being brought up that you're hearing in court. That fearlessness, where do you think it comes from?
I think you've just literally analyzed me. I have got a different type of relationship and a fearlessness around death. And I only realized once the book, well, it was leaked, and we should talk about that, when the cover was leaked, how many people, and mainly Black people, were outraged with me because I'd written about 2 dead people. And my understanding was like, well, they're dead. Like, dead is what happens. So I had a very practical idea around death, where other people feel like I've intruded, I've insulted.
Definitely.
And I really am sorry. I'm feeling really bad about doing that, but I'm still like going, it is what it is. Like, I had to write about this story. I think in many ways I was very disturbed by Anele Tembe falling. I never believed that she killed herself. It just sounded weird. For me, the big thing that, and we're going into that suddenly, but the big thing for me was, why didn't Kiernan go downstairs and check if his girlfriend was okay? His fiance, the girl he had just got engaged to. I found that to be a very strange thing. Like, if you love someone, don't you want to go and check? Especially, she wasn't dead. Anele Tembe lay on the floor. I mean, not the floor, the road, a horrible street, an early morning Sunday street. For 20 minutes, that girl slowly died. Why didn't he go down and see if he could help her?
Does the book get to the why?
Well, I have, and I'm not going to tell you all the juicy details, because there's a very compelling chapter where I get to interview the man, Rob Stefanatu.
Who's that?
He's the man who's sitting in his apartment, Sunday morning, sitting watching the news, when he hears the screaming of a woman. Yeah. He says it's not a normal screaming. He thinks someone is being murdered. He's hearing, leave me alone, leave me, ah! Like screaming, like, hysteria. But that someone is with her. She's not just like screaming. He hears the screaming. He's sitting on his couch, and then he hears a bang, like a gun going off. He thinks someone's been shot, and it's Anele's body dropping onto the street below. He rushes to the balcony. AKA sees him. There's reports in the newspapers that AKA sees a man across the road at a balcony. Rob doesn't see AKA, but AKA doesn't know whether Rob has seen him or not. So do you understand what I'm saying here?
Okay, but you had said AKA sees Rob. So Rob is not sure whether AKA is seeing him, but he definitely sees there is a man.
Rob does not see AKA. He admits to me in my interview with him, he does not see across. He just looks down, he sees a girl lying there, and he gets downstairs.
How does he know, though, that AKA can see him?
Because in the press later, AKA admitted to seeing a man across.
Oh.
In some interview or whatever, there's information out there that AKA knows that someone across the thing has, well, he thinks has seen him. In fact, he hasn't. And I don't think AKA knows that. AKA then goes to the room next door. That's according to
the statement, his statement. Okay.
He goes, and he says his friends tell him not to go down. Sorry, I'm going to be quite blatant here. Your friends tell you not to go down. Why are you listening to your friends? Your woman is lying on the street below. Rob rushes down. He sees a body of a black woman. She's naked, but they've covered her now with a sheet. He doesn't.
So who's arrived now before Rob?
Rob, and there's some people from the Pepper Club that have come out and have covered her with a sheet.
Okay.
Rob knows the people who own the Pepper Club. He phones these people. They say, put cones out, sort out things. Rob phones the paramedics. He goes to Anele Dembe now, who the sheet has covered. He pulls the sheet back. He says to her, if you can hear me blink, she blinks. She's alive. He starts, a strange black woman, he doesn't know that it's AKA's girlfriend. He knows nothing about AKA and Anele. He tries to wipe the blood from her mouth and he starts doing CPR on her. For me, this is part of the story that like literally is the minute, like the seconds of Anele lying there, the reality of the girl who's just like, oh, she just jumped. She was crazy. Just fell, you know what I mean? Like there's been so much shit said about Anele Tembe. But the reality is a woman is lying. 22-year-old girl is lying. Her body, one can only imagine what it looks like. And then the paramedics come. She stays alive for about 20 minutes and then she passes away.
So you've written a few books and... I mean, when I pick up the book and find out that this writer has written a few other books with similar storylines, it then seems like it's just a career for her. Why? What's the motive for you, to write this particular book?
Firstly, do you know how many books sell in South Africa? Like very few. A bestseller is about 3,000 to 5,000 copies. I'm also a publisher. I've published almost 100 books. You hardly ever break even. I do think this book is going to sell. The idea for financial gain was never my motivation. I literally felt the scream of Anele Tembe and I wanted to write this book. I felt that the story had to be told. It's a toxic love story. It's a story that can happen to any of us. Mm. It's a story where that passionate relationship that you fucking love the guy so much or the girl so much, something starts happening where you get bad for each other. You can't see the signs. Everybody tells you to stop seeing each other, but that it might be a sexual thing. It might be a emotional thing. You cannot leave that person. Whatever they do, however hard you try and run from them, it just keeps pulling you back. And I wanted to write about that story because I think a lot of people are involved in those relationships. I want people to say, is that fucking me? Should I maybe think that I could die? Because when love kills, as my book says, it's actually about that love can kill people. That the corrupted, obsessive version of love can kill.
But didn't you think, I mean, similarly, Oscar Pistorius, it's almost a similar message. Don't you feel like that message you've already conveyed in the Kelly Kumalo story, because Senzo was essentially also killed by love, even worse, he had a wife.
It's not a story that ever gets old. Romeo and Juliet is the most read set work probably book in the world for people. It's an archetypal story. It's a story of love. Love is a story that can never be spoken about too much, especially when it's tragic.
Mm. How much did the Oscar and the Kelly book sell?
Oscar sold 8,000 copies in about the first 3 weeks.
She's the best seller then.
Then it stopped selling. Then everybody hated Oscar because the book came just as that court case was decided. And it seemed like everybody wanted to buy Oscar and then they stopped. Mm-hmm. Kelly didn't sell that much, hey? It was the early days of Kelly Kumalo. I'd say maybe 3,000 or 4,000 copies. It was okay. That's, but listen, you got how many millions of people in this country? We're talking about like a drop in the ocean of people that are buying books. So I think people have a very skewed version of what the publishing industry. People were accusing me of making millions. I kept millions of randela I loved that. That was being said to me. Like, I was like, where? Where's the... And then I was also accused of taking money, brown envelopes from... Obviously, I think they were intimating the Tembes. No one commissioned this book. I wrote it. I wrote it in about 3 or 4 months in a tunnel of... Can I say the word passion? Obsession, rather. I got obsessed. I watched every single AKA interview. I read every tweet. Social media is a big character in this book. Mm-hmm. It's like a beast that lurks behind. It's the kangaroo court of justice. It's the crowd bang for justice. It's the arrogance of the anonymous, where people can throw rocks at each other, accuse each other, where hashtag Anele, hashtag AKA become a war.
But you see, everyone has got access to social media, and I don't think maybe that's enough. You did talk to one witness to write a whole book. Any other avenues you took in the form of research?
Yeah.
Regarding, because it also involves very sensitive details. So what did your research look like?
Well, I mean, I sat down with Moses Tembe.
That real?
Why'd you look so shocked?
Because he's distancing.
You're reading,
he's
reading.
Distancing himself, though, from the book. That makes you look like a liar.
Yeah, and that's something that really surprised me. I was a little taken aback, but it was his spokesperson who released the statement, and it said he did not commission and contribute. For me, he should have just left it at commission.
So he definitely didn't say, come, write a book.
No, he didn't.
And he
I asked
any
him.
Editorial.
I don't want to talk too much about Moses. I think Moses is in the book. I think people must read the book. But I asked him and I sat with him a number of times to talk. You know what? Anele Tembe was very hard to write about because she was young. She had no interviews.
Yes.
She had no voice.
Yes.
Now, for me, that was one of the tragic things. AKA was performing all his life. He was the most like, he tweeted himself. He loved himself. He had so much to say. AKA sat down with Dembekile. I could get a lot out of that interview. That interview for me is a very key part of the book where it's almost like an informal court case. It's the only time you really hear AKA saying what happened, with Dembekile asking him, but then I do the analysis as the writer, questioning certain things, going and saying, but why is he saying that? Why is he doing that? Why is he avoiding that? So I try and like have the third eye in that interview. What are we talking about now?
We're still talking about how you went,
about
your research
it.
And how you went about it, the
I
different
spoke
ways.
To some of Kiernan's people. When I said people accused me of lying on social media because they assume that I say people is parents. I know Lynn Forbes.
Oh.
I do know Lynn Forbes. They brought out a very, I thought, aggressive statement against me, saying that they completely distanced themselves from the book, that what I'm opportunistic and something else. And, I mean, that's their prerogative to say that about me. What I can say about me and Lynn is... We know each other. There was a project at one time that we were involved with.
There's
each
a picture
other.
Of both of you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where?
On Instagram.
Oh.
Yeah, an Insta post.
Yes, there is
Who's
an Instagram.
Instagram.
My Instagram.
Yeah,
there was a time we sat on a couch. I think that picture, I think it's of that, where we are very cuddled up together. And I think... I don't know what I say on it. It's something about something exciting is cooking. So what I can say is that there was a point where we were involved with each other, and then our two different aims for the particular project went into two divergent ways.
Was the project a book now, or it's something else?
Look, it's not actually a secret, because that book was sold into the stores in South Africa. It was pre-sold. It was supposed to be at certain festivals. There was a book at one time.
What was the book about?
I can't talk about it. I actually can't.
So it never materialized?
It didn't materialize. Okay. And a cancellation of agreement was sent. And mutually, Lynn and the publishing company came to mutual understanding that this book was not going to happen.
And it never happened?
No.
I'm glad that you, because I think it would be very unfair to write about AKA based on what you're seeing in the media, like all of us. Obviously, the man has passed on, is not around to speak for himself, but you said you spoke to AKA's people. What did you discover about the man that hopefully is in the book through talking to his people about him and about the situation that the book is based on?
I think I got a very clear idea that AKA, from the time he was 4 years old, was performing. I don't know if we ever saw the real AKA. His whole life was a performance. Mm-hmm. Even in some way, I don't say his death was a performance brought by him, but he died in a, you know, in the same kind of way as Notorious Big. He dies in a hail of bullets. He's horrified in even his death. It's also a dramatic thing. I think AKA was encouraged as a little boy to perform, and he found his love and acceptance in being bigger, a super mega, the super mega character of being almost bigger than himself. And I found that there were people who were saying that he wasn't a nice person, that he wasn't a nice, this nice guy, that there were other incidents of abuse, that the toxic stuff that happened with Anele wasn't just around her. I don't go too deeply in the book about that because I was trying to be quite respectful to Kiernan Forbes. I think I've treated him incredibly respectfully in this book. It is tragic that he's dead. He was, I think, one of the best, if not, MCs, hip-hop producers, hip-hop artists in our country, and his loss is a huge loss for our country. But his personal life was not interrogated enough by us as the public because, like Oscar Pistorius, he was like the golden boy. Oscar was the golden boy of athletics. Kiernan was the golden boy of hip-hop. And the toxic masculinity that exists in hip-hop and the toxic masculinity that exists in athletics gives people the, the permission to be as toxic as they want, and everybody claps.
But as fans, should we look deep into people who are in the public?
Or
should we just not just take what they are offering us? If someone is an actor, should I not take their characters that they are acting out? Is it our responsibility see if are they a whole person internally or behind the
cameras? It's been it's the biggest question. I mean, Picasso apparently was a complete dog. He was a women abuser, apparently. He was a real shit. But his art is amazing. So does your creative genius give you the license to be abusive, a murderer, a pig? I don't think it personally it does. Mm-hmm. Or if I think you can appreciate the art, I still like Picasso. And to be honest, I still listen to Victory Lap. I love it. I think it's a great song. I mean, all of Mass Country's genius. I mean, all of his work is genius. But I also hear the scream of Anele Tembe while I listen to it. So I think it's good to be able to be realistic. There's something called celebrity obsession disorder. It's actually a thing. In this country, if you say something about, say, AKA, his fans take it so personally, it's as though you are hurting his own brother. The fan's own brother. People need to wake up. The heroes that they've heroified didn't give a shit about them.
Really?
Well, maybe. I mean, in Kiernan's case, the Megacy, obviously, I think Kiernan loved the Megacy. But I'm talking about other people. Celebrities don't know you. You know what I mean? Like, people think celebrities know them. Mm. And that they're so close to their celebrity that they actually literally believe that the celebrity cares about them.
But Melinda, I can say the same thing about you and your, like, because you even said the obsession. wouldn't that be the same as fans, how they would be obsessed with their whoever they like?
Yeah.
Because I feel like with your addictive personality, maybe if I can put it like that, your addiction over the years. Mm. So it's almost like through this writing, it took another form. Like it's just this expression of, it's another addictiveness and that you're expressing.
Exactly. Now. I completely agree. I write in my author's note that I become part of this thing. It's like the monster starts eating me. I become as obsessed as the people that I'm trying to show.
It's a full circle moment because I feel like with what happened to Anele is the, when you say you also had your suicide attempt, you know, of your thoughts that time way back. So it's almost like everything with the drugs, you know, it's something, this is a world, the way you love exploring and just like you're fascinated and just talking about and just expressing yourself through that.
Yeah, and it becomes very personal. I mean, I got fucked up writing this book. It was hard. I would dream of it. I would wake up. I would feel like everything had consumed me. It was very, I was in high addiction writing this book. But you almost have to be when you are producing something. The same way as probably Kiernan became very, like he was obsessed with making his music. Yeah. He would spend hours and hours. He was like proper genius in terms of that. I think that if you want to deliver something that is coming from a place of like obsession, you have to just like let it be. 15 hours, write.
Anele's father, Obab Dembe, hasn't really spoken much in public. There was an interview, I think, on SABC, no? Last week.
Yeah, with Criselda.
With Criselda.
Yeah.
You got to speak to him, and you said you're not going to speak about him. I get it, but... Like, what did you say you were writing when you spoke to him? Because it sounds like he doesn't know you were writing a book.
No, he
maybe
does.
Just thought it's another journalist for an article on a page in a Sunday paper. What do you say when you pick up the phone or when you meet him or propose that you want to?
I said I'm writing a book about AKA and Anele. And I think maybe there was a possibility that he thought maybe I was just trying to get context. But I didn't feel that from him. I personally thought he knew that I was right. I mean, he did know. And I had a recorder in the room and that was what happened.
But the families, they've distanced themselves. Does that mean they both didn't get to see the book?
Oh, no,
We see the book.
I did say, I mean, you don't have to. That's the other thing, is that a journalist... Every time people wrote about the AKA and Anele thing, like AKA killed Anele, remember all those headlines, Inside the Toxic Relationship and their Sunday World, all the videos. Did they phone the parents and say, can we publish this story? You don't have to. I think people actually need to understand this. Journalists don't have to get permission. You don't have to. This is not a celebrity memoir. It's not an authorized biography. It's a story about a toxic love relationship that goes terribly wrong with two people landing up dead. And I, as the journalist, decided to do my own investigation on it. Do you understand? I didn't need to get permission.
Because in the public domain, AKA as a celebrity.
And it's and huge public interest, the story. It's the most searched and read story since Oscar's trial. When Kiernan died, when Anele died, it was huge. And the public interest around the court cases, the inquest, give me as a journalist every right to write about the story.
But people would say there's a big difference between an article and a book.
I know. And I'm interested in why. Why do you think it is? Because I want to know why.
Well, I guess in this instance, you tell a story of people who have passed on, they can't speak for themselves.
But in an article, the same.
But in such detail, and then especially when then you're not going to get the support of the families, that becomes also something that...
I think the support of the families... I mean, I didn't foresee the book cover being leaked by somebody.
I find it funny that the book even leaked on the death anniversary.
I know. I mean, it's not funny. It's terrible. And I didn't leak it. It went out. Somebody found it. And I felt like I was ambushed. I felt like the Forbes had a statement and that was released quite soon after that happened. No one had read the book. Not one word. It was the most hated book in South Africa last week without one person reading a word. Mm. It was insane. So no one knew what was in the book. But it was almost like, let's prepare quickly. It's not like we don't want to have anything to do with this book.
But also, when I think on the book, there's a part where I saw where you kind of like just shed where that AKA obviously benefited from, because obviously he didn't speak Vanek and wasn't his music wasn't Vanek. So, but he benefited from, you know, collaborating with other black artists, and you know, so it almost saved, it kind of like as if he was exploiting in order in his growth. Mm. But then the same thing can be said, whereas you as a white woman, you're telling black stories, or you know. Or of other
benefiting
races.
From black grief.
Yes, and yeah. You're benefiting from that. So isn't that a bit...
It's very similar. And, you know, there's not much I can defend in terms of my skin colour.
Mm-hmm.
I am white.
Yeah.
There are times that I wish I wasn't. I hate white people sometimes. They are, like, hectic. White people have done some real shit in this country and continue to do so.
Oh, of course.
But it is me. Like, I can't change that.
Yeah.
Someone had to write this book, I thought, and I was the one who did it. A lot of my black friends have said, Melinda, no black person was ever going to write this book. You wrote it. Mm. Just accept it. Stop defending yourself. Because I you know, in the beginning, I said to the publishing company, let's not put my name on the book. Then I said, let's put it in Braille, which was a bad joke. Oh. I mean, it wasn't like, but I just didn't want Melinda Ferguson on this book. I felt like I was going to get attacked. But then they were like, no, you got to have it on, wah, wah, wah. And I just thought, ugh, you know what, let's make it really small. And then it kind of got bigger. And I still wish my name was only on the back. It isn't my story.
Mm.
I haven't had any live launches because it's not a book to celebrate. Mm. I don't want people taking, like, photographs of me signing the book, like, being all like, it's not about that. It's a tragedy. And you make a very good point about, I don't say that AKA, by the way, exploited. It was said.
It was said in the industry.
Yes.
Casper even used to say it. A lot of people spoke about it.
A lot of people.
There was an opinion that, he's always got like coolies.
Why is
and
he
whatnot.
Always using?
It was a thing that was. Yeah. But it came and went and went.
So, I mean, I reported on that. That was a kind of thing that there was. And then I also said there was a possibility that he loved the idea of having a young black girlfriend, a Zulu girlfriend. There might have been a thing of credibility. Because for me, I also ask I know guys like young girls. Mm. I mean, that's clear.
Yeah.
Men have always loved young girls.
No, AK did say you must get yourself a young
girl. A 21-year-old.
It's better, it's more peaceful. You know,
and often wondered, he'd been with Bonang Matheba, who was a little older. Zintle was like 4 or 5 or I don't know how many years older. I wondered if AKA hadn't just got to that point where he was like sick of women who had their own lives, sick of women who had their own agenda, sick of women who were more successful than him, as in the case of Bonang.
Mm.
And that Anele Tembe posed such a untainted, beautiful, like almost virginal image of like this young, untainted girl who hasn't got so many followers, she's not got her own career, wouldn't she just be the most perfect wife?
Or maybe he just really liked her and it so happened that she was not famous, etc. And speaking of Anele, right, who was she? Because you did say that one of the reasons you wrote the book was because of she didn't have a voice. We didn't really know much about her. Sadly, the narrative of who she was, and that family has said it's not true that she had a mental health problem and she was suicidal. Mm-hmm. But from what you uncovered, and I'm assuming you went through the same channels as you did with AKA, talking to Anele's people and not just going by stuff in the media. Who was she?
I think she was a very bright young woman. Very bright. I think she was very emotional. I think she was someone who was sharp. I think she had a lot of... I have a chapter in the book where I kind of talk about Oscar, AKA, I talk about Reva, and I talk about Anele. And one of the things that really struck me about Anele was that she was very feisty.
Mm.
I do think she was young. I think she was privileged. I think that when she used drugs, I think she probably lost the plot. I think like anyone, I lost the plot. I nearly killed people when I was on drugs. I mean,
so drugs. She used drugs.
Huh. What?
You said when she used drugs.
I don't have any evidence, but at Anele's memorial, Moses Tembe's spokesperson, who read the letter, spoke about drugs very clearly, spoke about the problem with alcohol and drugs in this country and young people. I think there was a lot of suspicion that the two of them had been using and that they used during the relationship. Moses says in the book, why were they having fights at 3 and 4 in the morning? Why most normal people have fights at around 10 and 1. Okay, I don't know about 10 and 1. But 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, many of their fights were happening at 4 in the morning. I am an ex-cokehead, a crackhead. You can't sleep at 4 in the morning. You're so busy, like, schnaffing and trying to get more that is before the birds are singing, you're still, like, busy with your stuff. There was many of their fights were happening at strange times of the morning. I don't know if that proves it. Okay, and back to Anele. I think she was very outspoken. I think she called Kiernan for his shit. I think just because she was young, it didn't mean that she wasn't saying, hey, this and this, this and this. And I think that their relationship was violent both ways. What I pick up is that AKA was also being hurt.
Yeah, we've seen in footage that both...
Anele Tembe was being hurt. Recorded. The two of them were being hurt.
Jeez. Yeah.
The two of them were in that Chris Brown, Rihanna, shitty, I'm going to smash you. I mean, look at that thing that happened in the car. It was toxic. Yeah. It was violent. It was toxic. I think Anele got into a relationship that she was far from being able to handle. I think the hip-hop world that she was suddenly seduced into, or that she herself probably was seduced by, was just too much. I think she was a very sweet girl at one time. I think she was a good student. I mean, I spoke to her father. I got a very beautiful idea of who Anele Tembe was from Moses. I got other people saying she was crazy, she was out of control, she was this.
Are these people who knew her personally from her side?
No, it was during the AKA time. People who knew her then, yeah.
Oh.
During that year.
Who else did you get to speak to, like, from her
people
side
who will,
of the world?
People who will not be identified. I've given my word to people. People spoke to me on the absolute, like, why don't they want to come onto your show? The same question. People spoke to me with absolute, like, promise from my side that I would keep them anonymous. There is so much fear around this story. A lot of people have said, are you not scared of dying? I hope I don't die because of this story. I mean, I really don't want to die because of this story. But there seems to be a lot of people who think this story is going to kill them. People don't want to, you know, I try to get photographs. Everyone is scared.
That's because, I mean, someone initially tragically passed away in a relationship, and then the other person who survived from that relationship later passed away.
Was assassinated. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not...
Well, yeah. Murdered.
It was killed.
We saw it. Murdered.
By somebody who wanted him dead.
Now, you did say when we started the conversation that you don't believe she jumped.
I don't.
What do you believe? Because you've dug into, you know, the research. What do you believe happened?
I think a terrible mistake happened. Personally, I think that things went out of control. I think there'd been a lot of using, a lot of drinking, a lot of drugging in the Pepper Club amongst the party of people who were there.
You think, or is this from research?
Well, I mean, like, what do you want me to say? Someone told me this. Yeah, someone told me this, but I'm not telling you who.
That's fine. I just want to know whether...
No, it's not just me going...
Thumbs up, or it's like research, and it's like, okay.
No, it's not thumbs up. There was a lot of shit going... There was a lot of stuff going down in the Pepper Club that night. I think the two of them were fighting a lot. I think that things got out of control. I know that her engagement ring was thrown back at Kiernan. It says so even... He said that.
She threw the engagement ring at him.
I think she broke up with him.
That night.
She broke up with him many times, but maybe there was something about that night. I wasn't in the room. Mm. So you got to remember, none of us were, and they're both dead. We can only go, maybe this happened. So I don't know. No one else. So you can't say to me, do you have proof of what happened in the room?
No, you can't have proof, but you're saying it from what you've learned.
I think it's possible she broke up with him. Mm. I also think that Anele had been filming things between them. He had been filming things about her. You see, the one, my worst video is the one where he's talking and he's going, someone's under the influence, and he sounds under the influence, and that room is trashed. You've got all that glass and the mirrors, and you can see people have been using. First thing I see on that video, people are using.
Mm. Yeah, you would know.
I would know. That's a complete drug, trashed up, alcohol, complete trashed up room.
Look at all of this. All of this. Look at all of this. Look at all of this. We got somebody here under the influence. Tried to jump off the balcony. My eardrums are ringing. I think I burst my eardrum. I have a witness that witnessed that I did not fight back. And there is no fighting back from my side. This is how it looks. So when we go to court, this is what I want people to see.
She's sitting rocking herself going, I want my mother, I want my mother. Oh, man. It breaks my heart, that one. And he's just talking very dispassionately, filming her. Someone, like when I show them or whatever he says, you know, someone, like someone's broke, messed up the room, someone's under the influence. He says it himself, someone's under the influence.
Oh, man.
Those terrible, the door video is, they're only screenshots in the public, but I've seen that door video, and it's hectic.
And then 3 years later, 2 years later, right, he passes away, or a couple of years later. What do you think happened there? Who do you think is responsible for AKA's death?
Well, there's a court case, darling, and I don't think I'm like going to be putting my head on the block for anything else. But in the book, I speak about such like people who might have. Obviously, on social media, the biggest suspect was Moses. I mean, that's what it all went. I don't think he did it, but I do think a lot of people had just went completely mad and said it was revenge. I believe that somewhere along the line, AKA was killed because of what happened to Anele. I don't think that they are separate, but I don't know who called for this. Then there was other stuff. So I personally think it looks like it's got to do with that. I don't have proof. There were other people AKA pissed off in his life. Let's be honest. Do you know of anyone who he upset? I'm sure you do.
I just know about former business partners.
Yeah.
I mean, business
Hello.
Didn't work out.
Business
they went
didn't
their
work
separate
out.
Ways. But I wouldn't now sit here and say,
no,
he's a suspect.
Yeah.
No, there are people that are business partners. There are people that are upset. Would they be as upset to want to have a hit on him? Who knows? There was another interesting story, which kind of would almost make a brilliant movie. That women, like a GBV, very extreme group, got money together to pay Nkabi.
Women!
To take not only AKA out, but Tibbs as well, because he was also, like, under suspicion in the Me Too movement. That they were. That's the story.
Nah, but I think that story doesn't make sense. And I'll tell you why, especially when you added Tibbs, because they met there coincidentally.
Mm.
They didn't even take the same flight to Durban. Mm. They've been friends before. He used to manage AKA.
I don't think he was killed on purpose. No.
And they found out that, oh, he's next door. Oh, hey, bro, what's up? What's going on, right?
And then, when do women from NGOs have 800 and 3,000 rand to pay anyone? Yeah. That's, for me, the biggest
Hold
thing.
Hold on, but we don't know that money it was for the
Oh, well, that's what there is allegations.
There's
the allegations
money,
there
was a flow
that,
of money.
It might have just been for consulting.
Yeah.
There was a flow of money.
No,
GBV
I don't
group.
Believe
I know
that.
The GBV group. I
That's
look,
extreme.
It is extreme. I think that it's a kind of almost like a desire. There are a lot of women that are very angry about Anele Tembe's death.
A lot of people generally, even men, just people. Yeah. It's sad, man. You know, it's a sad story.
What, what worried me, and it's almost only now with my book, it seems like, I don't think my book is like going to open this whole conversation, but on some level it is. The book is starting to make people again speak about Anele. I want people to speak about Kiernan and Anele as a tragedy. I don't have any agenda in trying to make AKA look terrible in this book. I think that one needs to just look at this as a love story that went terribly wrong. Mm. And that it could happen to your son, your daughter, or me and you.
Exactly.
Probably me less so because I'm getting into the go-go stage now. People have been saying that and I've been like, really?
You know, if I'm trying to buy this book and then I'm watching a podcast, this one, and you opened up by saying you don't believe that you don't believe that Anele jumped.
Mm.
How much, like, how then do you find the balance to be impartial? Because already, and you're human, you're allowed, you know, to have your own opinions. Mm. Already you come into the writing of the book saying, I don't think this lady jumped.
I think the evidence is going to, look, the inquest keeps getting delayed.
Yes.
The inquest keeps getting delayed and it's not getting delayed by the Tembes.
Yeah, they want justice. Yeah. They want closure.
I think that any family, just like the Forbeses want to know what happened to their son in Durban in that court, the Tembes want to know what happened to their daughter. So the inquest keeps getting delayed. The court case is going to now slowly start. I mean, we've all seen what's happened with Senzel. The case is still going on now. Everybody is just like, when are we going to see justice? When are we going to see the end? I think we're going to hear a lot of evidence in the inquest that's going to be very compelling to support my idea or my belief that Anele didn't kill herself. Hmm. I believe so. I've seen some of it. I've spoken about some of it in the book. I don't want to sit and give my whole book away now, Sol, because, honestly.
Look, if I pick up the book, right, so I read the book and then at some point, I almost went, man, but a lot of the stuff here I've seen on social media, right? Because being young, black, South Africa, who listens to hip-hop, I know the AKA story. Mm. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. Mm. If I know all of that, what chapter shouldn't I miss in the book where there's going to be new things that I'm actually learning based on your research?
Well, I hope there's more than a chapter.
Oh, yeah, but which chapter should I go to if I already know the background about AKA? Because it spoke about AKA, Casper Beef, you know.
I know, but I had to do that in the context. Book because there's some people who don't even know. Like, they know, AKA, they know nothing.
They heard about the story in the news. People. Yeah, white people, generally.
let's not, like, even beat around the bush.
They have more composure.
And I haven't written this book for white people. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind a few white people buying this book.
But you needed to give context,
of course,
for someone who just heard about it in the news. They sit, you know, they're in a different world.
I would say, I could actually tell people, if they were really following the AKA story, then maybe just, like, there's a section where it says the life and times of Kiernan Forbes. You could maybe skip that if you're not going to be interested.
Yeah, I'm the biggest. Yeah, I know the story.
If you know the whole thing. Yeah. I think as soon as we pick up again with AKA and Anele part two, I think that starts becoming really about the relationship with a lot of detail that people didn't know. But for me, the chapter at least that people really should read is the chapter called The Snap. And it's a book about AKA and Oscar. It's just a chapter about AKA and Oscar. Now, some people might be going, are you out of your mind?
You are drawing comparisons to, you know, someone who his case hasn't even started to a person who's convicted of culpable homicide.
Yes.
Already mentally, that does something. There's an influence.
You want to defend Kiernan.
It's like, no, it's like me comparing AKA to O.J. Simpson, right? I mean, then already mentally you've influenced someone's opinion because you're comparing him. Isn't that unfair? Because he wasn't found guilty of anything.
Yeah.
So I'm not so much comparing because I think they're very different people. And I say very clearly in the book, it's very different. AKA was convicted of culpable homicide. Kiernan Forbes was never convicted of anything. He died without a single charge against him. So it's not that. I'm not comparing that. What I'm comparing more is the public, the way that we as a public enable toxic behavior amongst these kind of toxic men. We, for a long time, saw little Oscar as the most amazing ambassador for South Africa. He was like this Paralympic. His behavior started long before he murdered or he shot Reeva Steenkamp by mistake. Mm-hmm. That behavior started long ago. Kenan Forbes showed problematic behavior long before Anele Tembe died. Mm. Come on.
Come on, that's unfair.
Why is it unfair?
Because we found out, I didn't even know Oscar had a gun. I didn't know he was shooting at restaurants. I didn't know he had anger problems up until the case. Now, with AKA, we just saw AKA as a rapper who has the bravado of Kanye West. But you can't say there is red flags. He's toxic.
After Anele Tembe dies, did you see the videos that came out?
We did, and there was outrage.
But that was after.
Yeah, and after Reeva Steenkamp dies, do people start talking about Oscar as being toxic? Do you see the comparison? It's the same.
Okay.
We only started when we heard it, I was sitting at True Love magazine the morning, Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Oscar's girlfriend, Reeva's dead. I was like, oh my God. Like, I thought someone else had shot her. Like, I for an hour did not believe Oscar, our hero, had killed her. Mm. Then Oscar, all the stories started coming. When Anele died, everyone, you guys, I watched your MacG podcast.
Oh, yeah?
You were sitting there. AKA's girlfriend committed suicide. You said it.
The narrative was that at first. Just like, you see, when you said you thought Oscar Reeva was murdered, not by Oscar, mm-hmm. all of us initially were like, someone who jumps out of a window... Yeah, till we get the stories and the tidbits of the facts.
And then you start putting it together. So in the very same way, that's why my chapter exists, about the initial denial because of our hero. He can do no wrong. I'm talking a lot to you.
Yeah.
But then we start putting the pieces together. The door video, you don't know what he's doing to me. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. That girl, Anele, as she's going, you don't know what he's done to me. You don't know what he's doing to me. Mm. For me, it's telling you that something shit is going down.
Yeah.
So there were other stories that started coming out. And then then you start wondering, did she kill herself? Or in a moment of absolute, like, unbridled rage, anger, chemically induced, I believe, did a mistake happen?
Mm.
And did she get thrown?
Do you think your books will stand the test of time? So, because obviously you say that you use a lot of social media and obviously with even the Kelly Kumalo story, whether it's the Oscar as well, and the same with this current book.
Mm.
Over the years, like you see now with the case, for instance, with Senzo Meyiwa, it's still unfolding, you know. So all of these things happening, even now with the whole, like you're speaking, maybe after the court case, after there's the verdict and all, then maybe do you feel like, do you believe in your book or the facts that you have in the book so much that even after it, everything will still stand as...
I think if we see justice, this book will be very accurate. If for some reason there isn't justice, and this is possible that it might not happen, because remember the NPA didn't want to prosecute or they didn't see any reason to.
Yeah.
Now, it's an inquest. The NPA is, for me, on their back foot. Like, are they able to say they might have been wrong? This is interesting because maybe they can't for some reason. I think my book will reflect an accuracy. Will it stand the test of time? I think there will be other things that will happen. This will be a story where there's still revelation. Like, I couldn't do the court case. I couldn't do the inquest.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of another book. I mean, after
Around this story.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is like, you know, a Better Call Saul. Oh, to Breaking Bad. Okay.
Yeah, they always call me.
Like, it's the prequel to Breaking Bad.
Yes. Yeah.
This book is the prequel to the other story that is unfolding. Because I cannot do the court case. I cannot. I felt like the book needed to be done, like a prequel to Breaking Bad. This is the prequel. And when everything is revealed, I've got a lot of information that I couldn't put in this book because of the time where we're in with this.
But you've expressed you feel unsafe, or maybe your safety or you're paranoid currently. Why continue now that you're mentioning want to write another book?
You see, as soon as I start now thinking, hang on, there's more. I've always been like that. You should have seen me. I mean, as an addict, I ran into the guns. I ran into fire. I'm one of those people. I probably am an adrenaline junkie on some level.
Would you say it's like a fix for you?
Yeah.
These difficult stories with a sense of danger around
them. I do. I mean, I just think that someone's got to do it. Someone's got to do it.
It's your addiction taking another direction, as I said.
Yeah.
man, I'm going to check out the book. I'm still going to finish it. Like I said, I skipped a lot of chapters personally because I knew, the story of AKA.
And you were trying to prep.
I was very intrigued. And I was trying to prep.
You were skipping chapters, not because they were badly written.
No, beautfully written. You can tell you're a seasoned writer. Ghost Lady? Anything else?
There's a question I wanted to ask you. Mm. So in the past, I want to take you back. You said you worked in Joburg way, way back. And there's information, like a rumor, that white journalists were sleeping with Kwaito stars to stop stories of, their misbehavior. Is that true?
I never heard about that.
So white journalists were sleeping
with Quite a stars
were sleeping with journalists so that they don't write about them.
In early 2000s.
I was never approached, and I'm a bit upset.
Oh,
because I was never approached. But I mean, it could have happened.
So you have no stories. You have no encounters with any white
guys. And there were many white guys.
Jeez, man, I wasn't even hit on. Why? Nothing.
And did you witness any alleged physical abuse that Arthur Mafokate did?
I always read about that. Oh, okay. We were talking a lot about that, but I never witnessed it. But in True Love, it was something we spoke of in the office a lot.
Wow.
Hey, what do you know that we don't know?
No, it's from those, since you were in that kind of space.
Yeah.
Like, there's always stories from the past about this.
There was a lot of stories. You can imagine, 11 black women and me in the True Love office. Because for a long time, I was the only white woman there. And that was just, it was great. I loved that because I just lost my kind of whiteness. Yeah. It was nice to lose my whiteness for a while. And
you live in Cape Town now. You go all back.
I've gone to the United White States of Cape Town. It's embarrassing.
Do you get any death threats, man? Because
they're making a lot about death threats. I got tagged to the Kaaba. Is it Kaaba with a click or?
I don't know how to say it.
Okay.
Okay.
Should we say this?
Wait, a Facebook page.
Yeah, they've got a taxi. I don't know if it's a fake account.
Yeah, maybe you don't know if it's run by them or not.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, it said, get your snipers out. This woman is causing trouble. And I'm tagged to the Kaaba Brothers page. And that was oh my God, that was bad. I felt like, why are people doing that? They were trying to frighten me. There were pictures of guns with someone standing with a gun saying, watch your back, do you know what you're messing with, that kind of stuff. But I haven't had any, letter bomb so far. Ryson sent to me.
And you live in Cape Town. You're very close to some parts of the story, such as obviously Anela's death. So I thought maybe...
I've been invited to Durban, but I'm getting a bit worried. Everyone who invites me now, I'm like, what do you want? Someone invited me to Mpumalanga to go with the premier for this GBV event. And my thoughts are what do you want? So I'm a bit paranoid at the moment.
Now, stay safe. Good luck. And thank you for meeting up with us. Very interesting conversation. What can we expect? There's another book you said you're gonna drop, but anything else?
Yeah, publishing. I'm a publisher, so I'm publishing a book called Sizzlers, The Hate Crime That Tore Seapoint Apart. And it's about those nine gay boys at this massage parlor in Cape Town who were all murdered at the turn of like 2002, 2000. So that's another story. I mean, it's about a murder.
Jeez.
Like, what is wrong with me?
What's wrong with you? You love
what
all this.
What is wrong with me? I like
macabre,
the blood.
Gory.
Life dark. And death. Death.
How much do you spend on counseling? Damn, you need a lot of counseling.
Selling Beverly Hills or Selling Sunset.
I love those shows.
I love Selling Sunset. I know it's so embarrassing for someone with intelligence. Selling Sunset is like my drug to unwind from all the
You
murder.
Are the drug. The first one, it's the stories of death and tragedy.
The dead people. And then I've got Selling Sunset and Buying Beverly Hills.
Yes, I love it.
Now, Melinda Ferguson, thank you so much.
Thank you,
interesting conversation. Like I said, guys, if you're in Cape Town, check out the place. It's beautiful, man. Sun Square, Cape Town City Bowl, right, Kanye?
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to come through with the Naga and the kids?
Of course. Okay, no, just Naga.
Just, Umntana bazombiza Rooftop, the next child. If the next child of Ghosties is named Rooftop, you know why. Hi, man, it's been great. Peace. We're out.
Bye.
Welcome to Black Excellence. Do not fear, for if you do, just sip on some grandeur. And if you still do, ask ourselves, what would Mapapunzi do? Pagama chila, itlesha lefiki. Bungo yi, even if when they ask you, how sabi yini, do not fear. For if you do, just say, anistivi. This is the medicine of censorship. This is the pill. Which one is that one? Podcast and chill.